Want to pull off the season's freshest trends? You just need the right shoes. That's where Designer Shoe Warehouse comes in. Loving wide-leg jeans? Pair them with sleek, low-profile sneakers. Obsessed with the sheer trend? Try it with mesh flats. Feeling boho? Comfy sandals nail the whole free-spirited thing. Find on-trend shoes from the brands you love, like Birkenstock, Nike, Adidas, and more at DSW.
I'm John Batcher, visiting with the author Richard Munson. His book is Ingenious, a biography of Benjamin Franklin, scientist. Emphasis in Richard's book on the experimental Franklin. But there was the political Franklin we know well from revolutionary times. He was older than our founders. He was a founder. All of the names we know so well look up to Franklin as this antique wandering around and a somewhat stout man in his seniority. 70 would have been old in the 18th century. 80 would have been unbelievable, something comparable to 150 today. And we'll get there. But I go to one particular moment when it was clear to me that Franklin wanted to find a way to keep the colonies in train with the empire, the king. He didn't want to be defiant. And the parliament put him in a place called the cockpit, which is really the hearing hall in Whitehall. And the prosecutor for the parliament lambasted him, that's an inadequate word, without Franklin being able to answer for himself, and defamed him in front of Parliament or those who attended. I've always felt, Richard, and you came across this moment in your book, that was when they lost him. And if that scene hadn't happened, or if there'd been the opposite of, can we find a way to work together, Franklin would have stayed loyal and maybe he would have influenced the Continental Congresses. What do you make of it?
I think you're exactly right. The English, particularly the Parliament, lost their best possible advocate, their best mediator, who still loved the king and was hopeful that the king would have the colonies be part of a grand British empire. The reason that he got in the cockpit is that he released some letters from the English-appointed governor of Massachusetts, and the parliament just felt that this was their chance to get back at him, get back at the colonies for the Boston Tea Party, which I should note just in passing. I mean, Franklin was abhorred by the Tea Party, thinking that it was an abuse of private property, and disliked mobs and was far more interested in reasoned argument. But the parliament were so angry at the colonies, and this was their chance to get back at Franklin, who was in England as representative of the various colonies. And they just grilled for over an hour and lambasted him. And as you know, he sat there and sort of took it, but he was sort of realizing that, a chapter had turned here. He could no longer think that there was a way to alleviate the tension between the colonies and the parliament. And it was probably the time that he then, when he went back, began to think far more appropriately about independence. If I might, though, go back to what you had mentioned in the last segment, the American Philosophical Society. This was also a chance for Franklin on the opposite side of, instead of being yelled at, here he was when he was back in the United States or the United Colonies. He created, or he believed that American would be recognized and appreciated by European elites if they were able to demonstrate technological and, intellectual prowess. And so he created an association, the American Philosophical Society, that was an intercolonial group of researchers. And to be honest, it was probably one of the first efforts to bring together representatives from all of the colonies, which at that point were unbelievably strictly independent entities that didn't like the thought of having to work together with the national government. And so in some ways, Franklin, through this association of researchers, this united association of researchers, set the foundation for the United States.
The cockpit is January of 74. He returns to Philadelphia in April of 75. The guns are already out. He meets with Howe before the Battle of Long Island in September 76, and he can't find a way even to calm Howe down. October 76, he sails to Paris. He's solar system famous at this point. The French adore him. They call themselves the Franklinistes. Wonderful. There's so much more to Franklin, but we've talked about his experiments. Richard, though, adds a chapter that's refreshing, how Franklin's been used by the epochs and the biographers ever since. It's a revelation to me, Richard. The one I liked, I've told you already, Mark Twain, that those lists he made about good conduct ruined the lives of other boys who otherwise would have been happy. But there are uses of Franklin that are appropriate for the time, and they can't see it. And maybe we're in one right now. You can't know what the future is going to think about us. I've mentioned, though, the challenge to the kite experiment. Odd, very odd. Why is that happening? It's a demythologizing that seems uncalled for.
I wish I had a good answer for that one, because I do think it is uncalled for. Franklin has gone through numerous stages, which is not unusual for historians to reflect upon past events largely through the lens of their current situation. And that has changed over the years. So Franklin went from being idolized as, you know, the leader of independence or the creator of a new form of, you know, philosophy called pragmatism, or he was viewed because he came up with these lists to be more industrious or to focus more on order, of being kind of a puffy, you know, person that was a little bit boring of telling people what to do. And so we've gone back and forth on him. I think at the moment we're in an interesting time, at least from my perspective. Why this book became interesting to me is that I, like many people, are increasingly concerned about the rejection of science or the dismissal of facts. And here we have one of our nation's founders, probably one of our most popular ones, embracing empirical truths, embracing observation and experimentation.
Ingenious. Ingenious is the book. Richard Munson's the author. Highly recommend visiting Franklin in this moment.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.
You're great at protecting your own personal information. You probably even use things like two-factor authentication, strong passwords, and a VPN. But as much as you try to be in control of how your information is protected, there are lots of places that also have it, and they might not be as careful as you are. That's why LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second for identity threats. If your identity is stolen, a LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will help solve identity theft issues on your behalf, guaranteed, or your money back. Plus, all LifeLock plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package, meaning LifeLock will reimburse you up to the limits of your plan if you lose money due to identity theft. You might not be able to control how others handle your personal information, but you can help protect it with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code IHEART, or go to LifeLock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply.